Hi, my name's John Lichty, and I'm an alcoholic. I saw my sponsor today, Clancy, and asked him what he was doing. Because I'm going to drive down to San Diego and speak. You're sick. I could see that. I'm going, no, you're not. I'm going to drive down to San Diego. You're sick. I know I was going to be driving down here and speaking. I'd be watching a football game right now, but he's a good man, and he loves AA, and he goes everywhere and anywhere to carry his message, you know, and he saved my life, you know what I mean? I love my sponsor, and I just know I have to come down here and speak. So, speaking of, reminds me when I was boxing. I want to do it. I just don't want to do it tonight. And, what it was like, what happened, what it's like now. I just want to say one thing. I've been around here a long, long time. And, I'd like to welcome you people in your first 30 days and your last 30 days. Because I've been around here a long time, man. That's the way it works. And, man, once you start that slide, I've seen it's impossible for some people to get back, you know. And I was born in Santa Monica in 1948. Joe Louis was still heavyweight champion. And, I never knew my father. And my mom was orphaned during the Great Depression, so I didn't have no relatives. And, I just grew up. And, my mom remarried when I was about 6 years old. She married a violent alcoholic, and that had a big impact on my life, because he was a punk. And used to get drunk and beat my mother, He was a punk. And, I remember one night he hit her in the nose and broke her nose. And, we're just sitting in the darkness listening to my mother cry. And I heard her cry a lot of times. I never heard her cry like that. And that, later on, if you're drinking and doing that kind of stuff, man, later on, I carried that stuff around with me. I got in a lot of trouble, cops, get my ass kicked. Anytime I saw a bully, man, I could see my father in him. And a lot of trouble with the police, a lot of get my ass kicked, Because I'm not one of these guys that's got to be 99% sure if I'm going to win the fight, And my sister called me, I don't know how many years ago, and told me he had died, and I go, that's too bad. He's dead and burning in hell exactly where he belongs. Because, something, when you're that young, I'm sorry, there's no forgiving that. It was burned into me, Thank you. So, Thank you. So I grew up all around West LA, Santa Monica area, and I never amounted to much. I divided my life up into three phases. And one was 1 through 26, where I accomplished absolutely nothing. And the other one was when I was 26, I started boxing, when I was getting sober when I was 35. And 1 through 26, got arrested 12 times. I wrecked 3 cars going on the same street. And, I thought, something that could happen to anybody. it's just the way it is, that's the price we pay. And I grew up during the Vietnam War, and, none of us wanted to go over there. And I had 6 friends from my high school die in that war. And over 50 friends died from this disease. And I went all kinds of horrible ways, And, that's the way it was, And, for a while, they're going left and right, And I never thought twice about it. And, I'm an alcoholic, but I did everything you can do out there. I slammed dope, sniffed glue, cough syrup, huffed, did it all. But I'm talking about alcoholism because I respect the traditions. And I identified, that was the first thing I identified with. Because I was coming to these meetings with Marvin, who was on this pink cloud and got me to come to these meetings with him. And at that time, I had quit drinking. on my own, and my life turned to an absolute nightmare. And so I'm coming to these meetings with them, and there's cookies to eat and girls to stare at. So I kept coming. That was it, man. I mean, that was enough for me, you know. And this guy got up there, and I thought it was all BS, man. I mean, you're looking at me, some gray-haired old geezer, going, how much are they paying him? Or he didn't drink the way I drank, or he didn't feel the way I felt, and then when I went through what I went through, so I was thinking back there. And this guy got up, and he talked about the way he drank. Opened up his throat and poured it in, and he felt his face getting all numb, and he knew that was going to be a good one. That was exactly the way I drank, man, because I did not like the taste of alcohol, but I liked what it did for me. It got me downtown in a hurry, man. I feel my face getting all numb. I go, oh, this is going to be a good one. And a good one is getting my ass kicked or getting arrested, you know what I mean? And just all kinds of horrible stuff, you know what I mean? And I'd like to thank my roommate, Mark, for giving me a ride down here. He's almost a year sober now out of the Midnight Mission. Second turnaround here, and maybe he's going to get it this time. And, so I'm growing up, and all these people are dying, and, I just couldn't see my life without drinking or using, you know what I mean? I couldn't imagine my life without drinking or using, and I can't imagine my life drinking or using today. You know, I'm sober 28 years. I got sober at 35 years of age, you know what I mean? I tried everything out there to have a better life, and I just couldn't do it, you know what I mean? This is the only thing that works for people like us, you know what I mean? And I talked about not drinking, how my life turned into a nightmare. I'm in my 30s, and everybody's doing better, you know what I mean? Everybody's doing good, and I'm just, like, stuck in this rut, man, you know what I mean? So I figured if I quit drinking, my life's going to get better, you know? And so I quit drinking on my own. And, my life turned into an absolute nightmare. Everything I ate went right through me. I thought I had some kind of horrible bowel disease, you know? Because my stomach was just tied up in knots with fear and regret and great fear for what the future held for me, you know? And I could not shut my head off. And, I thought, you know, something, I got some kind of horrible disease, man. I'm going to die. And I go, good, I can't stand this way of living. I couldn't stand it. And that's when Marvin came by in that pink cloud and got me to go to these meetings. And, Marvin didn't make it. We buried him last June, you know what I mean? And but he was on that pink cloud, and he got me to come to these meetings. And, I've been here ever since, you know. And I don't have, a canned pitch, so I'm going to be going back and forth. So good luck. So like I said, I never amounted to anything. I quit high school, rested, and all that. And but there was one absolute love in my life, and that was boxing. You know, I used to watch the fights on Channel 5 from the Olympic Auditorium. Absolutely loved boxing. And I ran into a guy and ended up down this gym on 78th and Hoover. And if you don't know where that is, that's in South Central LA, and there's not too many white people down there. And, I just absolutely love boxing. And I don't know if you remember what the bell for recess sounded like or how you felt, man, but when I get to that door, that gym at the door, or get ready to go in, that was my world, man. I loved it. I loved the whole old black trainers, all that history. And I just loved everything about it, man. You know what I mean? And, I had my first fight at the Olympic Auditorium August 2nd, 1975. I remember my trainer looked at me and goes, how do you feel, John? Strong? I looked back at him and I didn't say nothing. I was supposed to say, I'm scared. I've never been this scared in my life. I'm so scared I can't feel my legs. And because the dressing rooms are beneath the Olympic Auditorium, so you can hear the crowd out there. And I'm the fifth fight, man. I mean, like I can't stop drinking. You know what I mean? And I'm sitting down there, and I know what I've been doing, man. And I'm gonna be out there pretty soon. So now I'm out there, and I look over at the guy I'm fighting. I go over to Jimmy Lennon. I go, Jimmy, how much do you weigh? 163, same as you. I look at him and go, me, I'm 193. There's been some kind of horrible mistake here. So the referee gets us our instructions, and I can't hear a thing. I'm just looking at him and going, damn, look at him, man. Go back to our corners, wait for the bell to ring, and I'm looking at him. Oh, man, he looks like he hates white people. So it was like, I'm not exaggerating. It was like out of a script, you know. I mean, he gets off to a fast start. I'm up against the ropes. I'm seeing these huge flashes of light. It takes me a little while to put together. I'm getting hit, and you know, the referee's getting ready to stop the fight, and I realize that. And I go, John, do something. So I start punching back. I cut the ring in half, trap him against the rope, knock him out. The Olympic goes nuts. I go nuts. I was only going to have one or two fights because at 26, that's a little old to get started in boxing in 1975. But let me tell you something, when I hopped out of that ring, everybody's hugging and kissing me. Even the Mexicans are clapping. I mean, I knew at that moment I was taking this to the end, man. You know what I mean? And, you know, I won the diamond belt, I won the AU, I won the golden gloves. When I won the golden gloves, I got best fighter of the tournament. I beat out guys that later fought for the world's title, you know what I mean? And, you know, I met this girl, and that's one thing boxers cannot do. Girls and booze. And she liked to drink and screw. And I was in a lot of trouble with her, man, let me tell you. She's just killing me. So I just thinking about it. After I met Lori, I lost 5 of my last 7 fights. And, you know, but I remember, like, this fight I had with Rafael Reyes out in the Latin American Press Club in Pico Rivera. You know, it was such a hard fight. I heard it inside for 2 weeks after that fight. So they want a rematch us the next month. And I said, it's going to be different this time. I'm going to leave Lori alone. I'm going to leave the booze alone. I'm going to get in the best shape of my life. And if anything, it was worse the next month. You know? And, man, I'm praying. I'm sitting at that door, just staring at that door, hoping, just praying he doesn't show up, man. I don't want to go through that again, you know what I mean? And he must have remembered how hard that fight was because he didn't show up, you know? And, you know, I just think I was having fun. I like to have fun, you know what I mean? But whereas it's alcoholism, you know what I mean? And at the end of my career, I remember I want to win the Golden Gloves twice, you know what I mean? I want to be, because I remember when I won that Golden Glove title, I put that trophy where it would be the first thing I saw when I woke up in the morning. And that's how much I love boxing. So I want to be twice Golden Glove champion. So anyway, I'm fighting at the Olympic again. I'm fighting Tony Soto. I heard so much about him. Twice national champion. 107 fights. Just knocked Mark Davis out with a body shot. And I'm thinking, I can't leave the lawyer or the booze alone. And, you know, anyway, so the bell rings. He throws 3 punches. I'm already through him like a sissy. I remember I caught the first 2, slipped the 3rd, sucked him in the gut, and I was thinking, this is going to be easy. Next thing I heard was 6. And, you know, so I'm talking to my friend Marvin. The guy got me to A couple days later. Well, that bitch referee got hysterical and stopped the fight after the first knockdown. John, you were down twice. But Marvin, I was in the ring. I should know. I talked to a couple people later on. Yeah, I was down twice. And, you know, I was so humiliated by that. You know, I was down twice, stopped in 54 seconds the first round. You know, my trainer goes, that's it. You're done, man. And I want you to come down and help me train fighters. And I wish I'd listened to him, but my alcoholism took me another way, you know what I mean? And now I'm drinking all the time. I mean, nonstop. Man, I just went from a middleweight to a heavyweight in a heartbeat. I swelled up in this fat, bloated pig. And I don't know what's wrong with my life, man. You know, I just don't know what's wrong with my life. And, you know, I'm down at that gym on 78th and Hoover, and I'm drinking. I'm politely told to take it outside, John. I don't fit in down there anymore. You know what I mean? I don't fit in with my friends because they're all doing better in life. Man, my life is just a nightmare. And so I thought I'd quit drinking, you know what I mean? But I tell you, before I stopped drinking, I remember I'd come home, man, and I carried a gun the whole time I boxed because, believe me, down that part of town, you ain't going to get no help, man. So I carried a gun the whole 5 years I boxed, and two clips in the glove compartment. And, I'd come home, put that gun on the table, and go over and pop open a warm beer because my girlfriend had moved out with a new boyfriend and took the refrigerator, so I was drinking warm beer. And I think just put that gun in your mouth, pull the trigger, only hurts for a second, you know. And I've been shooting the wrong guy if I'd killed myself that day, you know what I mean, or those nights. And, you know, so I started this journey. Marvin got me to go to the meetings. I identified with somebody said, you know what I mean, about alcoholism, you know what I mean, the way he drank. And a light went on in my head, maybe I got something in common with you people. Because believe me, I was not talking to the men. You know what I mean? I thought, man, I mean, nobody gets up and pours their guts out like that from where I come from. I thought all men were homosexuals. And you know something? Believe me, if you told me at 3 years of sobriety I'd been bringing a gay man flowers, I went, I'm so out of here. But that's exactly what happened. John Beirutti was dying of AIDS, and I brought him flowers. I sat there all afternoon, gloomy October afternoon, you know, just spent all day talking to Brian Comfort. He died 2 weeks after that. And he told me, John, that's a shitty way to go. And that's Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't care who you are, what color you are, what sexual orientation were there for you, you know, and... So I was not talking to the men when I got here, and I'm just sitting in the back, and I'm going, what the hell's going on here, you know what I mean? And these two girls, Jill and Andy, and they drugged me around everywhere, you know what I mean, to all the meetings, coffee afterwards, to the yard, until I started really getting this thing, you know what I mean? And I hooked up with this guy about two years sober before I did anything with any of the guys in the group, and he loved AA, and that's the kind of guys you want to hang out with, you know what I mean? He loved Alcoholics Anonymous, because the reason I knew he was safe was because every time I saw him at the Santa Monica Promenade, he had a different good-looking girlfriend with him. So I want what Mikey D's got, man. So I started hanging out with him. Here's this good-looking guy, you know what I mean? Big guy, absolutely on fire about AA. And his brother Nathan, the secretary of our Wednesday night meeting, I mean, he's later on, what a bunch of psychos from Jersey, you know what I mean? And they made me look like, you know, man, I mean, like, these guys are nuts. And they both love AA, you know what I mean? They've gone on to build wonderful careers and love and respect and wonderful families, and who would have thunk it, you know what I mean? And Nathan told me, you know, John, we've done nothing but AA. We don't go see us the therapist. We don't read books. We just do everything in AA. He's got three wonderful boys, you know what I mean? And a wonderful house, has people over all the time for the holidays, you know, gives the newcomers some place to go, you know what I mean, not feel left out. And that's what AA is about, man. If you're standing on the outside, you can get picked off, man. So get in the middle, and that's where those guys were, and that's where I ended up, you know. And, so that's where I started this journey. You know, I still talk to those guys every day, every day for 28 years. Well, excuse me, 26 years. First 2 years I hadn't talked to anybody. And, you know, I shopped around for a sponsor. I want to go, somebody's going to help me get the cash flow. So I asked Clancy to be my sponsor, and still looking for the cash flow. You know, but, I have a 14-year-old car, you know what I mean? But I've been to Europe 6 times. I've been to Thailand 21 or 22 times. Been to Vietnam. Been to Laos. And, I'd rather see and do things than look good, you know what I mean? And I have my priorities, you know what I mean? And, in my journeys, I've gone to visit the soldiers that we maimed in the Vietnam War. And, they totally accept Americans. They love Americans. And one of the reasons I found out is because I've seen it over there. We are the most generous people in the world. Not like those cheap Europeans. You know what I mean? And, so I've gone out and done things I never dreamed or imagined. You know, I went to a place called Dien Bien Phu up in the northern Vietnam on the border with Laos. If you know your history, you know what I'm talking about. But anyway, I've just done and seen, done things and gotten through things, too, because I had conditions on my sobriety when I got here, and I've been through them all. You know what I mean? Toughest thing was I had this great golden retriever, man. He went everywhere with me. I mean, went body surfing with me, ran in 10Ks with me, went on dates with me. I mean, I even took him to a massage parlor one time. And, I just love this dog. I mean, big head, big paws, just what a heart, man. I love that. I tell you, when that dog died, I've never been doing anything like that in my life. Anything. Nothing like that in my life. I brought him in, and I knew he was having problems. I brought him in and put him down on the gurney, and he puked up all his blood and lost control of his blood. And I just turned around, put my head and hands against the wall, and just started to sob. And I remember I woke up the next morning, I realized he was gone. And, man, I mean, I used to drink and use while I was out, and I wanted to be out, but I don't ever want to go back that way of life. Because we're quitters and losers, and I've had a lifetime of quitting and losing. I don't ever, ever want to go back that way of life. And, I gave my mom 15 good years of sobriety, you know what I mean? And, I'm very proud of that because I put my mom through hell. You know, and believe me, there's one thing I know in AA. There's nobody that loves you like your mother or your dog. I put my mom through hell, and she goes, when she realized I was sober and I was doing well and I was going to be okay, she goes, John, I don't have to worry about you. I want to put my head down at night anymore. And she didn't know half of it. She didn't know me getting choked, unconscious in the street, fighting. She did find out about me getting arrested twice in one day at the Colorado River. I think my sister ratted me out on that one. And, growing up in that household created a lot of division between me and my sister because she had to learn these coping skills, which brought the hell down on me for my stepfather, you know what I mean? And my sister's out there drinking and using. I talked to her one time in 25 years. And so my friend Mike, my first friend in AA, he's speaking up in Ventura. And, my sister gave him a 6-month chip. And he goes, John, call your sister. I go, get phone number. And what do you want to call her for? You know, I'm sick of her crap, victim stuff. And he goes, John, she's a newcomer. That changed everything. So that was a few years back. Anyway, so we started this healing process. And my sister got on the computer. She's real good at that. I know I get on Facebook. That's it. And she found my aunt, my father's sister. And I called her up. I go, Lloyd Corwin Lichting. She goes, yeah, it's my brother. I go, yeah, it's my father. She later told me, I went back to visit her 2 years ago, that it was to show some sort of practical joke. And she sent me some pictures of my father. He's a Marine in World War II at Guadalcanal. I can't tell you what it means, that family. I love my Aunt Fanny. Absolutely love her. She lives in a town of 6,000 people. I never seen so many white people in my life. And I mean, it's a whole different world, man. I'm an L.A. boy. And back there, you say hello to everybody. I say hello to people down here, and they look like, what the hell's wrong with you, man? You know, and I love my Aunt Fanny. And I got all these great cousins. It's unbelievable. I went back. I've been back 3 times. I went back last Thanksgiving and never seen it snow on me. You know what I mean? I'm an L.A. boy. You know what I mean? And, oh, man, it was so nice. I talk to her. I call her up every other Sunday. I mean, I used to call her every Sunday, but how's the corn doing? I mean, we can talk about it. You know what I mean? But I absolutely love her to death, man, and sent me pictures of my father as a Marine, and I love my parents' generation. They lived the Great Depression. They helped win World War II. If you know anything about your history, Guadalcanal was a tough one. I never knew him, but I'm proud of him. Because I didn't know it, but I also have a half-brother that lives 55 miles from me. And the first time I ever saw him was Thanksgiving Day 2 years ago. He was waiting on the corner for me with his 3 golden retrievers. And from what my brother tells me, it sounds like my father's one of us. Not much of a father. When I went back to visit my Aunt Fanny the first time, I went to church and met my father's best friend. Apparently, it wasn't the first time he got married and taken off. But it still doesn't matter. He's my hero. And I just love it back there. You know, I'm an L.A. boy, but my roots are in Indiana. If you told me I'd be visiting my grandparents' graveyard, I mean, it's unbelievable. And just to see my father, pictures of my father, and apparently my grandfather, Joel Lichty, like to tip a few too, so I'm learning all my family history, and it's something I couldn't have dreamed of. And if my sister didn't get sober and I didn't get sober, this would never happen. It would never happen. And, you just don't know what's waiting for you when you turn around that corner and get sober, you know what I mean? And on the other hand, you know what I mean, you can't take this thing for granted either, because I'm telling you right now, I've been around a long time. You quit going to meetings, you're going to get drunk. Sooner or later, it's going to happen. Because I've been in it 28 years, and sooner or later, I've seen it happen. Number 2, prescribed medication. I had married a girl I met in Thailand. We're married 11 years, and we split up. We had built a house in Thailand. I was going to retire there. Foreigners can't own property. I trusted her. Big mistake. And so she owns a house, and she was having men over while I was at my AA meetings, and some of the men in the group, too. You know what I mean? And if I just taken a little closer look at the family she came from, I might have seen what I was going to get, you know what I mean, but I didn't. And anyway, we split up, and I need this operation. And I'm really nervous about it. Really nervous about the operation, because they're going to cut me open, and that's going to hurt like hell. And then I got these pills, and I can remember in the old days, reaching for them pills, man, you know, I mean, just, you're already half loaded, so I'm tossing them anyway. I didn't want to go out that way, you know what I mean? And so I did what my sponsor Clancy said. Take him the day of the operation, and that's it. Nothing but Advil after that. I go, okay. Sounds all right. And I thought, wait, they're going to cut me open. That's going to hurt. And, you know, I did exactly what he told me to do. And, you know, something was kind of funny. I built this operation, this big, scary, frightening thing. And it wasn't. It was almost, I mean, like, when I woke up after surgery, I heard these little nurses going, wake up, John, wake up, John, like little angels. I felt no pain. Even after the first day, you know, I started taking the Advil, I felt no pain. I built this thing as a big, scary thing, you know what I mean? And I got through it, you know what I mean? But the main thing is, too, is I was very afraid of going out on those things. Very afraid of it. So you got to watch those pills. And I've had a lot of fun here. Been around the world, done a lot of good things. I mean, if I wasn't having a better time sober than I was out there, I wouldn't be here. None of us would be here. You know what I mean? These rooms would be empty. You know what I mean? I've seen people come in absolute hopeless wrecks and come back and build these wonderful, great, rewarding lives. I'm sponsoring a guy right now that did 28 years in prison, more than half his life. He did it on the installment plan. He did about 11 years on armed robbery. And I tell you, Mike has become one of the most loved and respected men in our group with almost 6.5 years of sobriety. You know what I mean? And Mike says something, you know it's going to get done. How do you go from that to this? You know what I mean? To becoming one of the most loved and respected men in our group, you know? And I say, hey, you know what I mean? It's my pleasure to sponsor him. And that's one thing, I mean, God put us on earth for, you know, to take care of each other and protect each other. And that's what I'm doing with him. And he is in turn doing helping sponsor other men and being an example. Because no matter what, you can say anything you want. And believe me, I know it's hard to believe, but sometimes people do bullshit in AA, you know what I mean? And it's the example, you know what I mean? Showing up on time. That's one thing my sponsor taught me. You know, do what you say you're going to do when you say you're going to do it. Show up on time, you know. And my sponsor's old school, and I like that, you know what I mean? Because I like the old school, you know. And I've got all these wonderful, wonderful friends in AA, you know what I mean? And before I came to AA, I was just sitting at home watching HBO, walking the market, getting a sandwich, because I didn't have that refrigerator. And just wonder what my life was coming down to, you know what I mean? And everything's a day at a time, no matter what you're going through here. Good times and the bad times, you know what I mean? I mean, one of the most important things I ever heard from my sponsor was, I had this terrible problem early in my sobriety. That it was so terrible, I can't remember what it was now. I told my sponsor this terrible problem I was having. He gave me a little direction that goes, have a nice rest of the day, John. Enjoy the day. And no matter what you're going through, you know what I mean, you can start the day over and have a good day. I could take a little thing and ruin 2 weeks straight, you know what I mean? And I mean, we're not here forever, you know what I mean? And so trying to help somebody have a good day, you know, be an example, you know? I've had some problems, and I thought it was a tooth problem, and he looked down my throat and told me to go see a doctor. So I go to the doctor, and they ran a scan on me, and they injected with something, and wherever the cancer is, it lights up. So from about here down, I got cancer, and it's affecting my voice a little bit. And like I said, I had reservations when I got here today, and this looked like the one could be. I don't know if I'm going to make it, but I tell you what I do know, I'm not going to drink over it. You know what I mean? Because I tell you something, it's giving me my self-respect back. And I'm not going to give that up. And if I got to go, I got to go. But there's one good thing. At least I'm not going to die during football season. Thank you. God bless you all.